This is the Weekly Bull and Bear by WealthVest, a podcast for financial professionals. Each week, Drew Dokken and Tim Prati will have an in-depth conversation on what's happening in the markets. Good afternoon, everybody. Today, it is March 15th on a Friday. Right now, we have seen stocks come down a little bit, largely driven by tech, Apple, Amazon. Some of those companies have their shares have slipped 1% today, largely due to increased inflationary concerns. When we're looking at the CME watch, we've got a 99% chance baked in that Powell's not going to announce cuts this coming week, and his comments this previous week were really kind of whimsical. Hey, we don't want to ease too quickly, that kind of thing. So that's where the market's moving. Tim, let's break it up to a broader discussion. Tech's obviously leading the markets, and inflation's a big part of that once again.
I mean, I'd say those are two ways to summarize this market, right? Tech is all about the ebullience, and any fear is around not a recession, but accelerating inflation. Look, our overall view is that, you know, we continue to see a market that's kind of an economy, at least, that's kind of going sideways. You definitely see some weakness on the employment side if you look at the preponderance of the data. But at the same time, you see some accelerating inflation data. Look, overall, you still have really ineffectual monetary tightening that isn't having a really meaningful impact on the economy. You've still got real wage growth. The Atlanta Fed wage tracker still running at 5%. That went sideways this past month. You've got consumer confidence that is strong, and consumer confidence that is strong enough that it allows people the confidence to draw down savings. That keeps spending. At the same time, you have seen retail sales weakened a little bit. You saw a decel in both Jan and Feb, a little bit softer than expected on the retail sales side. Redbook has confirmed that. Redbook sales have come in a little bit weaker. But overall, you know, the Atlanta Fed Atlanta Fed Nowcast is running at like 2.3, I think. The St. Louis Fed is the laggard there at like 1.3. But overall, it looks like real GDP is running at around 2%. Inflation, though, is still running kind of sideways now at 3% or higher. And everybody can debate OER, 3 month, 6 month, 12 month, all that. You look at the preponderance of the data, inflation is not coming down the way the inflation bulls hoped it would, right? The last mile argument is coming to fruition. And Fed and Powell is going to have a tough time talking about this next week.
Yeah. We're talking about inflation. How much of this do you think is related to oil and gas? Certainly been elevated in a way that it wasn't 7 months ago. You know, you're looking at well over three again, you know, on regular at the pump, and that's starting to price into people's one, their sentiment. Sentiment was flat. I think oil was a big part of that. And it's also just kind of, larger consumer unrest as well.
Yeah. I mean, gasoline is moving up. Gasoline matters. It certainly matters for inflation expectations. And gasoline's up like 30%. Oil is punching through 80 bucks here, 81. So it takes a little while for that to filter through. I think the bigger surprise is that have hit the most recent inflation reports this month and last month have been things like medical cost inflation, car insurance, things like that. You still have wage growth that's running too hot. Core services are still running too hot. You know, everybody likes to debate that OER is overstated. I don't know. OER was understated on the way up. Look, I do think that you have a ton of multifamily that is coming to market, new multifamily and new homes. Pricing is down. Inventories are hanging around a little bit longer. I have no doubt that you will continue to have pressure on the inflation data from the shelter component, but there are other things on the other side of that that are kicking in. Look, Barkin said it a month ago. His big concern is, what if goods deflation goes flat? What if we start to have goods inflation? Well, hell, I'm not worried about OER then, because the big concern is going to be that goods inflation is moving up, and we are not getting anywhere close to 2% inflation if you no longer have the tailwind of falling goods prices. In a global economy that looks like it might be firming up a little bit, and after you've gone through this huge inventory correction, wouldn't be surprising to anybody with commodities moving higher, with energy moving higher, with shipping rates problematic and the Houthi rebels and all that, if you started to see, you know, much less benign on the goods inflation side. And look, services, core services, ex housing are not going to come down. They are inflecting, going higher the other way. Again, you can parse the data any way you want. But if you look at the preponderance of data, 3 month, 6 month, 12 month, PCE, PPI, CPI, prices paid, look at today. New York Fed manufacturing came in super soft. Prices paid was way too high. So across the board, inflationary data is coming through, and you're seeing that show up in the 10-year, and you're seeing that in forward break-evens.
Well, and then you look at CNBC today, you have pundits, like I think it was Jeff Curry, but they throw up the stagflation word, which is obviously scary to people. A big part is we're obviously talking about elevated goods prices, oil, as we mentioned. But then you look at the ADP numbers and jobs appear to be softening. You know, private sector growth improved slightly in February, but it was less than expected for sure. We still see some growth in areas like leisure and hospitality and construction. But, you know, the gains across, you know, a lot of other sectors are really flattening out.
Yeah, employment is weird because, look, you look at like Kansas City Fed takes a index and they look at all different. They look at the household, non-farm payrolls, claims, continuing claims, and they aggregate it together. That is softening. And it is softening in a way where if that was the only chart that you could look at, look, thinking about the economy, you'd be like, well, we're about to have a recession.
Yeah.
But at the same time, coincident indicators of inflation are moving higher. So there is an argument that, okay, we could be in this kind of mild stagflationary environment where we are slowing, we're going towards, call it 1% GDP, but inflation is accelerating. That obviously is not a great setup for stocks. Anything that sounds or looks like stagflation is not a good setup for stocks. But if oil moves higher, if global growth is a little better, and therefore there's not, you don't have the tailwind of goods deflation, you could have an environment where we have kind of very slow growth, companies are shedding jobs a little bit to protect profitability, wage growth is going to come down a little bit in that environment. But you still have enough data, especially with goods, that suggests that you could have, you know, 3-ish% inflation, 1-ish% GDP. It's not stagflation, but it kind of looks and feels a little bit like it.
Yeah. I mean, and when we're looking at the global demand and global recovery, that picture is kind of mixed too. I mean, it looks like the UK is kind of on an upward trajectory, whereas Germany has slid into further deteriorating growth. So there's definitely some breakouts and some areas that are not within the Eurozone and within Europe in general, as well as Asia. But
yeah, it's wild. Since when was Germany the sick man of Europe?
Right. No, they were definitely the stewards of our trains are on time and everyone else get back, you know, get your stuff together.
Yeah. Germany really is the standout on the weak side. Mm-hmm. Whereas much of the global economy looks like it might be getting a little bit less bad. Asia looks a little bit better overall. You know, India's the star. Mexico in the Western Hemisphere is the star, both obviously benefiting from the de-Chinification of the global economy, de-Chinification of supply chains. Germany is the standout loser, and Germany's got a lot of the problems that we have, right? They got a labor shortage. They are putting up very meaningful tariffs to protect the auto industry. They are going to have a really meaningful growth problem. And you talk about a country that's looking at stagflation, where you've got real meaningful inflationary pressures on the energy side and so forth. And yet you have very little growth and very little opportunity for growth.
And we saw that amongst the farmer protests in both Germany and France, right? The price of diesel, I mean, created a mass movement that we haven't seen in this country, anything like that in a long time, from the standpoint of that. But yeah, you know, let's talk a little bit about the 10-year treasury. I mean, obviously that's elevated, you know, within the broader conversation. We've definitely discussed reasons why. How does that kind of set up as a framework for stocks coming into the next rest of the year?
Yeah. You know, we're poked up above 430. It's kind of like when you're in a chop range on the 10-year, when you're around 410 or something like that recently, you've had days where the 10-year was up, where 10-year yields were up, and the market still worked because overall the 10-year was kind of sideways and directionless. But now as we break out above this 430 range, I think it really starts to matter. And I think you're seeing that. Look, there is a lot of froth in equity markets right now, right? When you see huge retail flows into crypto, when you see huge retail flows into semiconductors, like we have historic flows into both of those sectors, when you see hedge fund gross exposure and net exposure super, super high, there is a lot of froth in these markets. And if you start to see it becoming very clear that you now have, you're trending higher and you're breaking out above resistance levels on the 10-year, I think that puts you in a position where you're set up for a correction here in this market. We're certainly overdue for one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In terms of the Hill, we saw a budget pass, which shocked some people. I don't think it's going to lead to a motion to vacate Speaker Johnson at this point. It seems like, you know, the appetite for that amongst the Republican caucus is greatly diminished after, what was it, 13 voteramas with Kevin McCarthy and everything else. But, you know, there's some very upfront and disgruntled people talking to the press about how they're not happy and how that they feel like the GOP reps right now are just going and blueprinting everything the Senate has put in place, which from an outsider looking in, that seems bizarre with everything that's going on from the past few months. But that's clearly the perception amongst some of the, you know, the Republicans within Congress.
Yeah. You're not going to get much else done, though, right? I mean, it just seems incredibly unlikely that we get a Ukraine deal done, that there's any funding that gets done for Israel. It seems that they have enough capability to keep the government open, but not much more than that. And, you know, look, the former president, the Republican nominee, Donald Trump, is running the show. He is telling Mike Johnson what to do and what not to do. And it's very clear that they don't need further embarrassment. You don't need Congress's, especially the conservatives in Congress, approval ratings to fall any further. Look, Trump wants to not only win the election, but he also would like to keep the House and win the Senate. And if you continue to have Congress embarrass themselves, that puts that in jeopardy. So I think they'll continue to do, Johnson will continue to do just enough to keep government functioning at a minimal level. But you're not going to actually make any progress on some important legislation that needs to get done.
Well, there's some chatters that, you know, kind of more moderate reps think like your Dan Crenshaws and your Bacons and everything else are working with Democrats to, you know, move around the speaker and to get the vote on the floor. If that happens, I think it will pass. There's a huge contingent of the Republican Party that's, when I call them moderates, they're really actually, you know, dyed-in-the-wool conservatives. So it's just right. With the way politics works right now, that's what we'll call them. But there's a huge contingent of, you know, that old school conservative that I think would vote for it. I think that if you saw the State of the Union, the president bludgeoned the Republicans with their failure to pass the border bill. I think they know that's going to be the Democrat strategy going forward, is they're going to be the ones who are strong on the border right now and who want something done. And they're going to portray Republicans as advocating chaos. So that's the Republicans' number one issue. I think there might be enough reps in the Congress who say, look, we got to capitalize on this issue and call it a Republican win because this is our issue. But we'll see.
I don't think it works. Look, the incumbent takes the blame, right? And the Biden administration has done a poor job of managing the crisis at the border. I mean, look, you have to put it
in context. Sure.
Venezuela is a complete failed state. You know,
you got Haiti that Haiti collapsed this past week. Yeah. I mean, so you have the situation geopolitically is getting worse. I mean, Florida is obviously concerned about, you know, now a huge new batch of Haitians. So yeah, you've got to have some kind of national security apparatus sooner rather than later. But
yeah, but the president, you know, the Republicans, from a political standpoint, as cynical as it is, you would hope that politicians actually take a break from politics and govern for a little while. But maybe that's that's a quaint old days thought. The incumbent's going to take the pain. Biden is going to take the pain on the border. And I just think as I travel around the country and I speak, if I do Chamber of Commerce meetings, if I do, you know, meetings not with financial advisors, but with retail, very often it's the number one question and it always gets asked. You know, I'm there talking about inflation. I'm there talking about the economy. But the thing that people always want to ask me about is, what are we going to do about the border crisis? Mm-hmm. Really, and it pulls that way as well. It is an issue that I think is a real yoke around the neck of the president. And I think it is one of the reasons why I think that Trump is going to be the next president. And I think that people are going to have to come to terms with in markets that if Trump is the next president, he's got a lot of ability in the executive to toggle down not just illegal immigration, but legal immigration. Just like he did in his first term, he is going to rip down legal immigration, and he's also going to impose much higher tariffs, not just on China, but on our closest trading partners. And while it would take congressional approval to get to the 60% tariffs on China, my guess is he'd be successful with trying to pass that legislation, because nobody wants to look soft on China. And I think the result of all that, and there's been some academic studies that have looked at it, means lower growth and higher inflation. We talked about stagflation earlier. Right now, stagflation is just kind of a mild idea of stagflation, really low growth and inflation holding above 3%. If you have a meaningful tariff regime and you really bring down the availability of labor, don't forget, since the end of the pandemic, 100% of job creation in this country, of labor force creation, is from immigrants, right? We don't have organic workforce growth in this country. So if you rip down the amount of immigrants coming into this country, legal or illegal, and you add tariffs, that is going to be a really ugly inflationary cocktail.
Yeah. Both policies seem very popular amongst the public right now. But I mean, you know, obviously we have worker shortages. The agriculture sector within the Southeast would absolutely collapse without illegals.
Totally.
So, yeah, I mean, you're just going to see, you know, some runaway inflation and a lot of goods, you know, would be the thought. But anything else we might have missed out on, Tim, this week?
No, I think we covered it. I mean, I think it'll be interesting to watch Powell next week. You know, he is the worst job owner in the world. I think even when he wants to warn about inflation, he fails at doing it. Yeah. Obviously, there's not going to be a cut next week. You already mentioned it. There's a 1% chance that they cut or something like that. So he's not going to cut. The question now is June, though. And June is right at the 50-50. And, you know, look, he's always data dependent. He's always going to be data dependent. But it'll be interesting if there's some acknowledgement from him that inflation is not only not trending towards 2%, but it seems to be accelerating. And I think if he acknowledges that they need to be vigilant to the fact that inflation is accelerating, you really could see June become less than 50-50. And I think markets would respond poorly to that.
Isn't there a seasonality aspect of that? Like when June rolls around, you're like, that 0% down jet ski looks really good right now. So, you know, people seem to spend their way out of their pocketbooks in the summer just as a lifestyle. Part of that might happen.
The savings rate has already been drawn down. You know, we already see savings rates being drawn down, and it's, you know, people, wage growth is solid. People's houses are worth more. That's why people start to rundown savings. So as we get into the summer, if the economy is really decelerating, and you, let's say the 10-year is higher, this 7% level really seems super important for housing. You know, you get to 7.10 on mortgage, you see a super slowdown. You get to 6.90 on mortgages, you see an acceleration. You know, you won't see the ability or the will of consumers to take down savings rates further.
Yeah, and you've seen FICO scores decline too, first time in a long time as well, which is kind of a canary in a gold mine or coal mine as well. But yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Sounds good, Tim. Glad that we're back at it after BISA. For all our listeners and subscribers, thanks for your time and thanks for your attention. And we're out.
The information covered and posted represents the views and opinions of the host and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of WealthVest. The mere appearance of content on the site does not constitute an endorsement by WealthVest. The content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. WealthVest does not make any representation or warranties with respect to the accuracy, applicability, fitness, or completeness of the content. WealthVest does not warrant the performance, effectiveness, or applicability of any sites listed or linked to any of the contents. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional investing advice. Always seek the advice of your financial advisor or other qualified financial service provider with any questions you may have regarding your investment planning. Investment and investing involves risk, including possible loss of principal.